Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Williams Occupational Therapy Q&A session for April, where we discuss previous blog posts and answer any of your questions. It's a quiet call today. Everyone's preparing for Easter, I think, so we haven't got many takers, but that doesn't mean that we won't listen. People won't listen back into this conversation later on down the track. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the most recent blog post, which came out on the 17th of March, and that is about aging, mobility, and driverless cars, the emerging trend for older drivers. And that was actually written by Dr. Mandy Stanley and Dr. Akshay Vij. And they wrote this blog post, and they are looking in at a current study at the moment that they're conducting into regards to what the thought processes are and what the uptake might be of older drivers when driverless cars become available. I certainly am very interested in this topic because helping people with disabilities, if we can get them actually on the road and driving and getting from A to B, that's very important. Now, if somebody's got a fairly significant disability and they actually can't control the car's steering wheel or pedals, they're really restricted in regards to relying on others. But if this technology actually comes available, then they're relying on a piece of technology rather than relying on another person. So that guilt factor will disappear, and they will be able to control that technology under their own accord and won't have to be relying on a carer to be able to get from A to B. That's very exciting stuff. I certainly remember when I was growing up, I used to watch The Jetsons, and one of my favorite movies as a teenager, probably shows you my age, was Back to the Future. And, you know, Jetsons were all flying around in driverless cars up in the sky, and I remember the traffic jams and everyone bustling forward one flying car at a time. And I also remember Back to the Future with the old flux capacitor and Doc and Marty driving the car that was flying. But we know that hasn't come into account, even though Back to the Future was meant to be 2015, that we were meant to have lace-up boots and hover skateboards and these time machine flying cars. That never came about. That time has come and gone, and we're still not in flying cars or time machines. And we got to ask our question, why is that? And my opinion is that it's mainly to do with the infrastructure to support this. We are set up around cars. It evolved from horse and cart, where we used to have roads designed for horse and cart, which evolved from walking tracks. And they're all land-based infrastructure that we've been set up for. The infrastructure has been set up around, we've all got a garage or a carport or somewhere to store our car that is land-based, where our homes have that. We have garages, we have petrol stations that are all land-based infrastructure to be able to support us getting around with cars. So it'll be a massive change before we actually change to flying cars and so forth to be able to get us around. But the driverless car is something that's in between that. The driverless car is something where we can be in the vehicle, but the technology is in control. The technology gets us from A to B. And that it's a natural evolution from things like GPS. The GPS knows the best route to be able to get from A to B the fastest way possible. And with the least amount of traffic, if we're on something like Google Maps, which is tallying how fast cars are moving at any certain one time. it's an evolution from that. And they're building on that technology to be able to help cars stay within lines on the road, stay within the markers, and be able to judge what the traffic lights are saying and reacting to those and predicting what might be happening. They've got sensors around the cars. Those sensors help us reverse. They help us park at the moment. But they will be keeping a nice buffer zone around cars as we drive into the future. And the cars will be able to take reactive measures to anything coming into that buffer zone. They'll be able to slow the car or steer away from it. So that sounds all really exciting. But I'm really excited, because what I'm excited about is somebody with something like significant cerebral palsy, for example, who doesn't have physical control to be able to control a steering wheel or pedals, or even control things like a little joystick to be able to help steer the car or do the accelerating and braking. They'll be able to, hopefully, press a button, drive into the back of a vehicle, set the coordinates that they want to go, maybe with an eye gaze technology of some sort, and away they go. The other thing that's really exciting is that we might be able to order our car to come and get us. So instead of ringing my wife when I've had too much of a good time at a party and asking her to come and pick me up and drive me home, or like it was when I was 16, relying on the parents to come and, 18, and relying on the parents to come and pick me up after a party. Well, maybe we could order a car, and maybe that car will come and meet us at our place and drive us home. Maybe kids will be able to drive. Maybe the 16-year-old limit for driving will be a thing of the past. Maybe kids who are really good at programming iPhones and tablets nowadays will be able to program a car and be able to let the car take them to sports training, take them to school, take them to wherever they need to go. And as a parent with three kids, that to me sounds really, really exciting. But one of the things that they're working on at the moment is the infrastructure to support this. We talked about infrastructure for flying cars, but the infrastructure still needs to be there for the driverless car. The driverless car picks up on the line markings on the road, and they pick up on the signals of the cars around them and the traffic light signals. I've just come from Broken Hill, and in that scenario, in Broken Hill, the roads are extremely wide, and many of the roads don't have any painted white lines on them, and or if they do, they're extremely faded, just about to nothing, and there's lots of cracks in the road that also look and feel like they are markings on the road. So if they're relying on sensors to pick up line markings, then our infrastructure has to change to be able to do that, to support that. And I'm not too sure what happens when the road is extremely wide. So the road on the left-hand side might be 2 car widths wide without any line markings. Does it drive over to the left-hand side and go around every parked car or stop behind parked cars? Or does it continue along in the centre of the lane? Because our current road rules at the moment say to drive as left as practicable to the left-hand side and merge out and around parked cars as appropriate. I wonder how that actually translates into our rural driving in Australia. What happens on dirt roads? We've got a lot of clients that need to be able to get from A to B in Australia who live on dirt roads without any road markings whatsoever. No line markings at cross junctions. All they're relying on is a simple sign that can quite often be knocked over. How does the computer recognize these type of issues? So that's one area of concern for me. But the other area of concern for me is, what happens if something goes wrong? Who is going to be at fault if something goes wrong? Is it going to be the person that programs the car? Is it going to be the technology inside the car? What happens if somebody, worst case scenario, does get run over? At the moment, we consider it to be driver fault. But what happens if the driver is actually not in control of the car? Whose fault if something does go wrong? And I know they're working on technology right now to be able to avoid these. But as we know, best laid intentions, technology can let us down. It can send out the wrong message, or it can malfunction at certain times. What happens if it malfunctions and we're slow to react and the driver can't take over the controls, especially somebody with a disability who may not be able to actually control the controls in the first place? What happens then? And this is one of the things that are going on in my head. And I know our companies are trying to suggest to us that these type of things won't happen, and they're actually safer than anybody driving, because they're picking up on all of the signals around the place all of the time. So when somebody steps into the buffer zone, the car is going to react, and we're not relying on a person. The computer is more predictable in its way of reacting. They don't get distracted, computers. And they're saying that these things are safer than a driver that is behind the steering wheel. But what happens if it does go wrong? What happens if it does malfunction? What happens, just the same way, if my battery or alternator goes in the car? What happens if the computer system goes in the car? What happens then? Who is going to take blame if it malfunctions and shuts down and sits in the middle of the road? Or it unfortunately does miss a signal or a person at that point of time as it rolls to a stop. How are we going to get around those things? So I guess what I'm saying is that cars are, they're working on getting a driverless car on the road as soon as 2020. Which we know is now only 3 years away, and that's not very far at all. And we know that they've got a plan to actually have an integrated system by 2040, which is only 23 years away. And I'm hoping to be retired in 23 years away from now. And I'm wondering whether I can shove the golf clubs in the back and go and have a merry good time without having to worry about traffic. Am I going to be able to stay on the road and independent in my house for a lot longer with a driverless car? And that takes us back to our blog post. The authors, Dr. Stanley and Dr. Vij, are looking at the wants and needs of the older driver, and whether they will take up this technology of the driver car as it becomes available in the future. It's a really interesting topic. I would love to receive comments in regards to what you think about the driverless car, especially for people with a disability. If you're listening to this and you're a healthcare professional, love to hear your thoughts on this. But I'd especially like to hear the comments and thoughts of people with a disability who currently may be driving with vehicle controls, significant vehicle controls in particular, and whether they would switch to the driverless car. Would you, if you had a disability or a medical issue that was impacting on your driving, would you switch to a driverless car as soon as it became available? If so, why? And if not, why not? If you'd like to leave a comment on our website under this blog post, we'd really appreciate it. It would stimulate a heated discussion, this point, and we know in the media that's getting lots of discussion and lots of communication backwards and forwards. We would love to hear the thoughts of a person with a disability or a medical issue. How is driverless cars going to impact on your life? So please, if you hear this and you know somebody, please share the connections to this recording, and please get people to make comment at the bottom of this blog post, and let us know your thoughts, and we might be able to advocate to the press the thoughts of the driver with a disability. At the moment, that's kind of been on the back burner. It's been an advantage. I know the Google use a man with a who is blind and actually get him to go around a little circuit with their Google driverless car and get around a little circuit, and they've got a big smiling face on his face in the video. So is that how you would feel? Is Google's representation right? Is it going to be like that for everybody? If you've got a major physical disability, what is it going to mean if there's a driverless car available to you? We have no idea how much they're going to cost. We don't know how much this technology is going to cost. Is it something that you would fork out multiple thousands of dollars for? All of these things. If you've got any comments about any of this type of stuff, we really invite you to make a comment, and hopefully we can get a little bit of traction and put the thoughts of the person with a disability out there for people to hear what you have to say. It'd be much appreciated. That's it for today. If there's any questions while we're here on the call, please let me know. Otherwise, I thank you very much for joining us. This is Brad Williams from Williams Occupational Therapy, Driver Assessments and Rehabilitation, and Driving Aids and Modifications. If you need anything from us in regards to driving assessments or driver rehabilitation or modifications, please contact us on 08-8125-5316. That number again is 08-8125-5316, or you can email us at admin@williamsot.com. That email address again is williamsot.com. admin@williamsot.com. Thanks very much for joining us, and we hope to see you in the comments section below. Goodbye for now.